Here we go. Tommy in here. Look at Nick Allen struggling between hot and warm. Very poetic of him. By the way, it's all relative. I'm just saying, hey, Tommy, get in here. I'm just saying it's all relative. The hottest planet is Venus. So just to
and
put
men
it in
are from Mars.
Okay, really? We're doing old references from the 80s? What am I, in the Phil Donahue show?
References to planets from our grade school days.
I'm doing weather. It's weather-related. It's climatological.
It's going to be a scorcher.
Here we go. Well, Dick Allen, I'm going to go from warm to hot. I used to say to Rich Marriott all the time, I'd see him in the hallways, it's going to be hot today, high in the 80s. I go, that's not hot.
Yeah.
Come on, get with it. Bunch of weaklings here on the West Coast. All right, it's a Father's Day, great big opportunity for people to get together and scream and yell about the Trump administration's Seattle protests separating families at the borders.
That's right.
CTAG. Oh, this is so terrible. Let's see. This is Joel and Peggy Ross. We're among the protesters at the Families Reunite rally in Westlake. Here we go.
Jeff Sessions is trying to terrorize people into not doing things.
People are asking for help.
They're asking for help. Yeah. People just want help. People want to be able to live their lives.
Okay. Ben Anderson coming to the rally. People want help. People want to come to the United States. Absolutely, they'll come to the United States. Why not? It's a great place to come.
Okay, there you go. So they're just rallies over the weekend in protest of this, and they use the Father's Day holiday as a way to kind of run the message home.
Yeah, that's good. Hopefully people are seeing this in Central America and not coming. Ben Anderson comes to the rally with his daughter. This is, by the way, this is the best thing the Trump administration could do. Because then you have Laura Bush writing a letter, the New York Times. You have
Melania.
His wife, Melania, comes out. This is great. This is exactly, if I were planning something like this, this is what you'd want. You want as much national and international attention as possible, that if you come to the United States and try to sneak in and claim asylum, they will take you, separate you from your kids for more than 6 days or 20 days, could be as much as 6 months. And then they'll put you together and send you back again. This is good news if you want to send this back to Central America. Stop coming across the borders.
But it might be bad news for our standing in the world to say, hey, you guys like the Japanese internment? Come on, we're doing it again. That's what Laura Bush suggested.
Yeah.
That's not a good look.
Just temporarily, Tom, because the number of people trying to sneak in the country has gone up three times.
Japanese internment.
Well, the difference was that was a Democrat. This is Ben Anderson came to the rally. This is with his daughter. Very upset.
I think it's the right thing to do. I'm a father, and I despise this idea of locking up children to punish the parents.
I'm not locking up the children. Hey, Ben, as
they
a father, let me give you some advice. Here's the rule. It's called the Flores rule. It's passed in 1997. We went through this before. But I'm wasting my breath, Tom.
You are. You're wasting
that
your breath.
That if somebody it's a lie?
Yes.
Okay. Really, you want to dismiss this argument by calling it a lie? Is that where you'd like to go with the debate?
Because it's a policy change. Tom,
hold on a second.
Yeah.
Here's the law, and you can read it. Why don't you look it up? The Flores, and it goes this way, that if you come in with a child and you can't prove that that is your child, one, the child is separated. Two, if you can prove that the child is being abused, that's two. Third, if you are involved in a crime, they separate you from the child. Now, what part is a lie?
All of that's it's a lie to say that you then impound. This is a misdemeanor, and what happens is you have discretion to decide whether you arrest that person immediately or not, and that's the policy change.
Right.
They use this big rubric of this law, and underneath it you have policies, and that's never been done. We've never had a zero tolerance policy, and that's what's wrong about this.
Just tell me, because you told me I lied.
Yeah.
So
no, it's
first,
not you
first lie. Part,
I said
first
that
part,
argument's a lie.
First part.
Yeah.
Not your child, child separated. You're abusing the child separated. If you come in with the child and you try to sneak into the country, that's against the law. You've broken the law. If you break the law, you are separated from your child.
No.
That's the floor. That's the lie?
No.
We'll come back to it, Tom,
after you read how it works. No, John, it's the policy of how you instruct it. It's like, I suppose.
Well, I understand that, Tom, but here's the deal.
You're breaking the law to park illegally, but that doesn't mean that you're then necessarily arrested for it. It's a misdemeanor. It's never happened before that every single person who applies for asylum crossing the border there is arrested. That's never been the case. It's a zero tolerance policy, and that's what's so wrong about this argument.
You have two counter positions and philosophies. In 2012, Barack Obama basically opened the doors. And by June of 2014, they had already quested almost $500 million of additional funding to do something about it. And on the 14th of June, Barack Obama said, this is a national disaster and an emergency. We need to do something because we've had 60,000 kids come across the borders. Kids, all by themselves, because they were sending them in here.
Right.
Because word had gotten to Central America, but on June 14th, they would stop a thing called Permiso. They would stop you from allowing you to come in. So everybody rushed in. But they had been told in 2012, hey, this is a building problem. This is a real problem. Do something about it. But they didn't want to do anything about it, and they quietly tried to get funding for it, but Republicans kept blocking it. Because immigration has been a problem in this country for the longest time because no one's had the guts to do anything about it.
That's
now
true.
What you have is you have one swing, which is Barack Obama. Hey, everybody, come on in. And then you have another swing, which is Donald Trump saying, stop coming in. We can't afford it and we can't enforce it. And the more of you that come in, the longer the wait is for you to go through the process.
That's
the majority
right.
of people that come into this country that are claiming asylum that are not actually in need of asylum is incredible. And to think that we're a terrible country, what percentage of those from Ethiopia? What percentage of those from Ethiopia are given asylum?
I don't know.
I'll tell you, it's 87%.
Okay.
And in China, it's
because
more than
nobody
it's more
from
than
Ethiopia 80. Tries to come in.
That's not true.
Well, I mean, my hunch is it's probably true compared to the numbers from Mexico.
Right. Number but of Mexico is 89% of those from Mexico are returned because their asylum claims are bull, Tom. That's the difference. The difference is this.
Okay.
How are you going to stop it? The only way to stop this entire thing is to get E-Verify in place. The reason people are coming is because we need people to lay bricks. We need people to build fences. We need people to dig holes. They know that. Their word has gotten to Central America. Hey, if you want a job, they can't find enough workers in the United States. They can't find. The economy is booming. Everybody come to the United States.
Okay.
And that's what we have. Right?
Well,
so you have... You don't believe that?
Well, no. I mean, the idea is that not everybody is coming to the United States because most of the people in that caravan end up stopping in Mexico. However, for those that are trying to come to the United States, we have a policy intact that's now a zero tolerance policy that had never been enacted before because we don't believe in zero tolerance. In fact, you've been on this show talking about how ridiculous zero tolerance in any form is, and yet here you're trying to defend it.
I think
here is how they're using it. The Trump administration is trying to create such a stink about what they're doing to force funding for the wall. And so he's using these children as bargaining chips in a political battle and just seems unseemly. That's all. It's a bad look for, you know, the rest of the world. But I think he's made a political calculation that this is going to inflame his base in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And even though his own wife and definitely George Bush's wife, Laura, may be outraged by this, but he figures, okay, this will inflame the base because immigration was my kind of you know, identifier, and that's why he's doing what
he's
doing.
Is this the wall that Laura Bush's husband proposed 13 years ago? And it passed with flying colors, including Hillary Clinton, the 700-mile border.
And we have a wall. The idea is...
Nope, they ran out of funding on it.
Exactly.
They stopped funding it.
Right. But we have a wall over most of it, and the idea is that he decided to make this an anti-immigrant stance. And it inflamed enough people that he got elected.
Yeah.
And now he's cashing in on this, and I think it's on the backs of these children, and it may politically work for him, but it doesn't mean it's a good thing.
Here's the Burien mayor, Jim Mata, says that these immigrants are no different than those in the past.
This started, you know, back when Englishmen and French came to Ellis Island, and, you know, they wanted to come to the land of free because of the oppression of their country. I mean, same thing that we're living today. It's just a different group of people.
Yeah, Jim, as long as you're mentioning history, how many of them were also returned if you didn't either have any money or they assumed that you were sick? They sent a lot away, too, Jim, that came across the borders. They sent many of them. They sent Jews back. They sent anybody they could possibly send back that came to this country, either that if you couldn't prove that you had any relatives here or that you came across and they assumed that you were sick with something, they would send you back again. So it wasn't like we let everybody in. Would Jim, the mayor of Burien, like to have open borders, or you want to do a catch and release that lets people come in, you catch them, and then you let them go back out into the United States? They hang around the United States. They say a year later, come back in for your trial, and 95% do not return for the trial, so then just become part of the fabric of America. Would Jim be okay with that? This is a very, very aggressive technique, and it is ugly, Tom, and the media is having a heyday with it.
You're having a heyday with it. I mean, right now, we've got the Trump administration. I know, but the Trump administration's having a heyday with it. They trot out the Homeland Security. They trot out Jeff Sessions.
They have to return.
They are making this a big political issue, and I think it's got to have been, it must have been a political calculation. They had Steve Bannon on for a half an hour yesterday on ABC, the Stephanopoulos show, just advocating for this. So I think they've decided, yeah, this is going to be politically break in our favor.
But everybody's doing it, Tom. I mean, over the weekend, you had Democrats screaming, your children being ripped from the arms of parents. And I've seen the children, and they're just staring at me wide-eyed. And then they talk to a child psychiatrist. They're suffering from PTSD, and don't bring your childhood. They're not allowed to touch them. They can give them a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Okay.
I mean, they're doing all the response. So then the Trump administration figures, we'll send Sessions out there, let him talk about it.
They're doubling down on
it.
So
everybody
clearly, it's got a political bite to it.
Absolutely. Here's Sessions.
Some years ago, it was decided to arrest some people who had crossed the border illegally. But anyone that brought a child with them would be given effective immunity from prosecution. Word got out about this loophole, and the results were predictable. The number of aliens illegally crossing with children went from 14,000 to 75,000.
Wow, from 14 to 75, verifiable numbers. Why did that happen? Because word got out, if you bring a kid, you could possibly get in and stay in a little longer. We'd catch you, we'd fingerprint you, do all that sort of stuff, and then we would say, okay, go, and we're going to come get you. Can you come back a year from now, or can you come back 8 months from now? You think people would come back, Tom? The answer is no.
Just 4 years. This cannot continue. These children are not entering at ports of entry, but in dangerous places, in deserts, and crossing our fences, and attempting to escape law enforcement officers. We do not want to separate children from their parents. We do not want adults to bring children into this country unlawfully either.
They're just sending a message.
I know they're sending a message. And it seems to me you could send the same message without being so inhumane about
it. Okay, we went from 14 to 70,000. So what would you do to stem the tide of kids, because it's about the kids coming into this country?
Well, first off, I don't know that we need to stem the tide as strictly as the Trump administration, but that's okay. They're the ones in charge.
It has increased threefold in the last year, so they now have 70,000 kids coming.
The idea, though, here is what is he doing? What is he doing separating the families? He wouldn't have all this outrage if they didn't separate the families.
So what would you do? Would you spend money, put mom and dad or mom and kid together?
I wouldn't be doing it the way – I wouldn't be as strict about who's coming in and who's not. But if you're adopting his administration's approach that you want to discourage immigration, I would think, yeah, at least you keep the families together. They may be in these holding, these empty Walmarts, but at least you don't separate the families from the parents from the children.
Okay, so change the law, because the law is that you separate
them. Well, but you don't have to change the law if you kept the policy, which is you don't arrest them. You can detain them without arresting them.
Okay, so breaking into the country is not against the law.
Well, no, because they're – well, yes, it is. Technically, but it's same like – it's like
okay,
parking,
so they broke the law.
It's like parking illegally and killing somebody. They're different crimes. And so if the crime is that you are then going to apply for asylum, that's what we allow for.
Right.
And it takes some time.
And what you should do is then come through the border and claim asylum there, as opposed to if you had gone to a border crossing.
No,
the majority are trying to sneak in some other way. And when you break, that's a law. You're breaking a law.
Yeah,
then they're going to get you and they can arrest you. And it's a big difference between that and parking. I'm going to give the solution.
Like illegal criminals.
We can cut right ahead. Here's the solution. The solution is E-Verify. If you established E-Verify and made it mandatory like they did in Arizona in 2008, the number of people that left Arizona, so the schools found a $50 million surplus, you had apartment buildings practically empty, so they dropped the rent, you had a tremendous amount of Arizona non-residents leave because they did a thing called E-Verify in Arizona, and they said it is mandatory. So somebody comes and applies for their job. The employer goes, okay, they go on this database, they put in the information that you have, and then it spits back, this guy's illegal. And then they said, if you hire that person, we will catch you and we will fine you in Arizona. And they started fining people. They started to actually enforce the law. And at that point, Arizona employers were like, we're not hiring anybody. No one will get hired unless we can verify who they is. And guess what happened? They left. And of all the states, it had the greatest deportation, self-deportation.
And it hurt the Arizona economy.
So let's see. We had a $50 million surplus in schools. So that was a relief for the taxpayers. You had apartment buildings actually reducing rent because they actually needed tenants. You had people that could apply for jobs and be paid a decent wage that was on the books, not under the books. So tell me again, what is the disadvantage of actually enforcing the laws?
Well, my understanding is that a lot of these migrant workers are needed now in states that they can't get access to them.
Right. So then they should do a temporary green card, refugee status, that would allow somebody to come in on a temporary basis and put that in place. But even the Trump administration is blocking E-Verify because there are a lot of employers that would like to be able to pay somebody cheaply under the table and not have Social Security. In fact, I read this story. A drywall company in the state of Washington was one of the first to be charged with it in Washington. And guess what the defense was from the drywall company? Hey, Your Honor, everybody's doing it. We just happened to get caught. That was the defense.
That's probably true.
It is true.
That's exactly what he said.
Yes. He said, yeah. The attorney for the company pleaded to the judge, saying, after all, the law is broken daily, and my client's employment practices have been indistinguishable from thousands of employers nationwide that also ignore this.
That's right. So that's why even both sides of the aisle think we need immigration reform. That's not the problem. Right now is the question is this a tactic that's legitimate, that's somehow working in our favor, in the United States' favor? The Trump administration feels like, yes, Trump says he will not be a migrant camp. He is so against this immigration stuff. It's kind of astonishing, but he has riled his base up enough to feel like this is a legitimate issue.
I don't know if it's necessarily the base. I think it's a lot of the southern states that are also Republican that don't have the money and don't have the finance and don't have the control. And you also don't have increased border patrol down there. They said, we can't handle this influx. So how do you do it? He's trying to turn the spigot off by having a lot of really bad PR spill back to Central America for the word to get out. Just like the word got out in 2012. Hey, come to the United States with a kid and you'll get in. Word is getting out now. If you come to the United States with a kid, they'll rip the kid from your arms and the kid will end up staring wide-eyed and silent at somebody in a jail cell, right?
That's right. Okay. Did Japanese internment discourage Japanese from coming to America? Yeah, maybe so. Is that a good thing? No.
Well, they weren't coming to the United States during the war anyway. They would never be able to get in. All right. I think we said a lot of stuff there. Did we settle anything?
How about DACA? Where's DACA in all this?
Yeah, well, that's another problem.
I know it is. Yeah. And it not needs to be addressed.
By the way, something else needs to be addressed. I think our camera is down. Andrew, is our camera down in there because people want to watch us?
I'll go double check on that. Looks like it's running on my end, but I'll take a look.
Okay, why don't you do a double check on that one?
Or do a double check.
Don't put yourself out with a double check. We'll come right back to Tom and Curly Show. Why women's voices have gotten deeper recently?
Recently?
Okay, right back. Ba-ba-ba-da-ba, Kia Mortgage 1-888-778-KIEL. Saw a bunch of people out and about over the weekend shopping for homes over in Sammamish. Good luck to all of you. I recommend you go to Kia Mortgage, get yourself a pre-approval letter. Won't guarantee you the house, but it certainly lets everybody know you are serious. 1-888-778-KIEL. Plus, also, interest rates are going up. So why not lock in one now? Kia Mortgage 1-888-778-KIEL. CL53969. Headline is the reason women's voices are deeper today. Apparently, if you do a study from women's voices and where they are on a scale back in 1945 compared to where they are today, you see a marked difference. Experiments have been done at various universities trying to find out why women's voices are deepening. And is this a biological thing or is this actually a conscious thing where women are trying to keep their voices in a lower register?
Or an unconscious thing where they are trying but not realizing it. So just to establish the test, they checked with people in the 40s and then checked with people in the 90s. So this is not like right now, but with a 50-year difference. And they say, yeah, that it's women's vocal expressions have considerably dropped. And why is that? And they said one of the things that they thought was, well, maybe because by the 90s, birth control, took birth control. Uh-huh. And that wasn't the case in the 40s. Could that be it? And so they rule out all these biological reasons. So they said, so this is still speculation, but it seems to be, it's verified speculation and that all the evidence seems to point to this, that the women's voices have dropped in Western countries primarily. Why? Because women are now taking on roles of authority and roles in leadership that they hadn't in the 40s. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they've ended up adopting what people think is a more authoritative sound because men had been in charge and men have lower voices
but
than women.
But not consciously. Still not consciously.
Well, it could be conscious. Now, what they do is they point to, they say that in those 50 years that it dropped like 23 points or whatever, mm-hmm, in terms of register of voice. But they say, for instance, Margaret Thatcher was trained. She has a vocal coach, and she managed to drop hers 60 points. Again, over five decades, it only dropped on average 23.
Let's listen to that now.
Okay,
Here's early Margaret Thatcher.
Okay.
And then what I'm going to do is we're going to come back. I'm going to play the new and improved Margaret Thatcher.
I hope this is a real one.
This is.
Okay, you're not doing a stunt.
Oh, well, just trying to make it seem more exciting than it is, Tom. Hang
okay,
on. Here
good.
We go.
Let's go.
This is Margaret Thatcher, old BBC interview, beginning Thatcher's career, roll one.
This is Thatcher. It's always supposed to be.
Wow, that is
she
deep.
Is low.
That is, wow. I don't know how she can improve on that. Any deeper, only dogs would hear her. Here we go.
A tremendous ordeal, maiden speech. Was it for you?
Oh, very much so. I've done a good deal of other speaking, but speaking in the House of Commons is quite different. It's a unique experience.
Do you think it's more difficult because you are a woman?
No, I didn't notice that. It really is because of the quality of one's audience and the fact that most of them have had more experience at doing precisely what you are doing.
Okay. Right. So now here later.
Here we go.
My face softly made up and my fair hair gently waved. The Iron Lady of the Western World.
Was it part of that is that physically? Because now it's like 40 years later or 20 years later? Or how much the difference in time on that one? Do you know, Jacob? Do you know the differences?
I don't, not quite.
But she went to a speaking coach.
Yes.
And I think they probably told her, just try to work on
well, they did, yeah. And if you saw the movie Iron Lady, you know, there are all sorts of demeanors, and that was one of the things that they worked on. And she managed to, so she consciously dropped it 60 points, mm-hmm, whereas unconsciously over five decades, it dropped like 23 points.
Yeah.
So that gives you some indication. But they say it might just be, so it could be conscious women trying to talk with a lower voice, or just be unconscious. When you're in a position of authority, since the only role model we've had in the past has been men, mm-hmm, then women tend to adopt a lower voice. It would be interesting, for instance, you know, going back to Elizabeth's reign, you know, she was the virgin queen, but she was a woman. I wonder if her voice was noticeably lower than the other women in the court at the time, because she was portraying herself as the equivalent, which she was, of the king as the queen. Mm-hmm. Another interesting thing about this is that there are countries whose women's voices are lower than others.
Uh-huh.
And, for instance, they said women in the Netherlands consistently talk in deeper voices than women in Japan. And they think that, again, this is, I don't know if you call it speculation, but this is kind of cultural comparisons. Women, it's sort of a difference between independence versus powerlessness. There's a much larger gender gap in Japan, that women don't have the same kind of status in Japan as they do in the Netherlands. And so it might just be a reflection of how equal or equivalent,
yeah,
the men's roles and women's roles are in various countries. And then finally,
okay, because I got another story I want to get to.
Okay, well, the last point. Oh, you don't like the Japanese?
I know, it's fine, but I mean, okay, is it going to be more interesting than the last point?
This will be even more interesting.
Okay,
the unintended effect of undermining the unintended effect is it undermines how well they are liked. If a woman has a lower voice,
mm-hmm,
she's less sexually attractive and considered less agreeable.
I've heard that.
That's bizarre. And then they finally cite Hillary Clinton. She was either too shrill or too unemotional because she went between two. And it's like, yeah, women's voices are it's tricky terrain. You want to be more assertive, but if you are too assertive, it comes off as shrill. And there's the dilemma, John.
It is the dilemma. And it's unfair to women in that just the basic physics of how their voice transmits compared to a male voice. You'll never hear a female voice be an announcer at a game. Because it just can't cut through.
We already have tried that, but it's a novelty.
Yeah, it can't cut through the din. That's the problem. How about the radio guy, Tom, with the voice? So CNN has the story, mm-hmm, about the without a voice, the struggle of a news radio man. He was diagnosed with a particular thing that now, well, here's CNN with the first part of the story.
So when you turn on the radio and hear me say, "I'm Jamie Dupree in Washington," it really is me behind those words. but it will be a computer-generated synthesis of my voice.
How come Jamie Dupree's voice can no longer be heard on the radio?
He has some kind of very rare disease that they've identified. And what's weird about this disease is it happens to impact whatever aspect of your body you use most, mm-hmm. professionally or just, you know, the most, I guess, period. So, for instance, it's called dystonia, I think, this idea that if you're a guitar player, it'll affect your fingers. If you're a vocalist, it'll affect your vocal cords. It's very rare, and there's nothing that they can do to fix it. What they can
do is... everything above the waist?
Oh, man. I don't know. Do tell, John.
No, I'm just wondering, Tom. Is it specific here, to a certain area? Like, is it, right now, you've mentioned hands
that's
and
right.
mouth.
Well, yeah, and I think you'd have to go to the porn industry because that's when they use it the most.
Yes, I understand.
Okay,
no,
so...
I was thinking feet.
Oh, you were thinking feet.
Because of my tap dance class I'm taking. Okay, go ahead.
And the parallels. So what they had determined about this particular disease is that a lot of people have this condition, but you need to have some kind of big other disease and or traumatic event happen to you, and then it will spring it into fruition, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it. In this particular case, he's a radio guy, 30 years, and this is where it's like the... Roger Ebert did this with his voice. Lost his voice, he had recorded so much that a computer can take the voice, your voice patterns, and actually make it sound more like you than a computer. Although, since I don't know this particular reporter's voice, it sounds more to me like a computer.
So he lost his voice and went off the air 2 years ago, but now he's back because of this.
That's right. But they haven't cured it. They've just decided that, okay, he can't talk, so here's how he can best do it, translate it through a computer.
So when you turn on the radio and hear me say, "I'm Jamie Dupree in Washington. It really is me behind those words, but it will be a computer-generated synthesis of my voice."
Hmm. I wonder if people will be accepting of that.
Yeah, boy, I don't know. I think that would be hard to get used to. I think the fact, if he has fans, people that have known him, like if all of a sudden somebody around here at Cairo has been on the air for 20 years, if all of a sudden Dave Ross lost his voice, I think if there's the pattern of Dave Ross's voice on, I think there would be a built-in audience. I think it would be hard to grow your audience, though.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. Let's see, when Ted Cruz took on Jimmy Kimmel, of course, went after Cruz, as Kimmel likes to do, by making fun of how somebody looks, because that's how caring Kimmel is. Cruz takes him to town and defeats him on the right near the basketball ring.
But barely.
Apparently, they both apologize to anybody who's been a fan of basketball because of what happened on the court. We'll come right back. Got that and a whole lot more. It's a Tom and Curley show right here on Cairo Radio. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 989-73. What is this for you?
This is The Nightmares. It's a track called Greyhound.
I get it. Tom, I found out the origins of the term rock and roll.
Okay.
Going back to the 1920s, you know what it refers to?
I think I did at one point. I don't remember, so...
Having sex.
Yep. Okay.
So when the DJs in the 50s were saying, "And here's another rock and roll song," either they knew that they were saying a bad word on the radio, or they didn't know the origin of rock and roll. But rock and roll, the idea of rock, was it's a euphemism for having sex with somebody. How about that?
And then the roll?
You just threw that in there. I think that was also part of it.
Yeah, you see.
Yeah, I found that out today. Well, I listened to books on the way in because my radio is completely on the fritz. And came across that one. I thought, there you go.
Okay.
So the kids love their rock and roll, apparently.
Maybe they're rolling out of bed. Is that the idea?
I don't think that's what they're talking about. Jimmy Kimmel takes on Ted Cruz. And, of course, this became a big thing. They've been going back and forth for about 2 weeks. And this is the only sound we can find from it.
"Did you spend more time this week practicing basketball than trying to get those kids out of that detention center?"
And the crowd goes crazy. That's all I got.
Okay, and they, and that's all anybody has. That's TMZ. And then tonight on Jimmy Kimmel, so we'll have more tomorrow maybe.
Yeah, the final score was
11-9. The great thing about this is they were supposed to, whoever got to 15 first, and the game was so long and so boring, they had so, many of the 8,000 fans had been were streaming out before they decided, okay, tell you what, we are not doing so well, so we'll the first guy to get to 11 and win by two. So they ended up cutting it a third short because it just was not, as it's described in, what is this, the Houston Chronicle. It was a Coachella festival of air balls, missed shots, and footwork that would make a sloth look like Usain Bolt. So anyway, it was done for charity. Ted Cruz won, as far as we can tell, in a fair game. $5,000 goes to a couple of charities, I think, as a result. And Jimmy Kimmel got 3 minutes to fill tonight.
We watched Jay Inslee take on Dory Monson, and you were like, well, that was really boring. But it was a couple of years ago. But what had happened was is Jay Inslee had a team he plays with on a regular basis, and then Dory put together his Cairo radio guys.
Yes, and you pointed out to me that they'd played an entire game with a lot of Cairo personalities beforehand, and then after the game, after they played.
Ladies and gentlemen, stick around as Inslee takes on Monson. And man, it was a slow motion car crash between those two.
That's right, but not because they're not good basketball players. They're just so tired, and it gets exhausting. And when you have thousands of people, maybe hundreds of people, watching you, it kind of it's like every missed shot goes, oh, there's a groan, kind of stuff. So it's not they're not the best exemplars of basketball, but I do think it was a good event for both of them. I was trying to figure out the calculation. I think they both came out better.
You mean going back to Inslee and Dory, or these guys?
No, these guys. Inslee and Dory were already at the top. They couldn't get any higher. But these guys, I think they both burnished their images.
Got it. Let's see. Stories to get to that you don't want to miss. Coming up at the 10 o'clock hour, Uber wants to get involved with the bike sharing program. Plus, also, Bellevue's got a vision where the van driving down the road, don't bother trying to make eye contact with the driver. We'll get to that and a whole bunch of other stories as well, including a listener owes me $100, Tom. How about that? We'll be right back.